Welcome to Conversations on the Back Porch, a podcast with Dr. Jane Vella. Jane is a noted academic and practitioner of adult learning who has written several books on how to design and teach learning events effectively, including the book, Learning to Listen, Learning to Teach, The Power of Dialogue in Educating Adults. My name is Dwayne Hodgson. I'm the Programs Director for Global Learning Partners. You can find us on the web at www.globallearning.com. Today I'll be joining Jane via Skype on her back porch in Raleigh, North Carolina to discuss the topic of safety. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Dwayne.
First off, what does safety mean when you're talking about a workshop or a classroom learning event?
This is such an important principle, Dwayne. I've just been writing about it in my new book called On Learning and Teaching that will be published in the fall by Josie Bass. And again, I'm speaking about the conjunction of safety and challenge. And one of the things I recognize is that when I start to learn something, I'm a little bit intimidated by the content. Will I be able to learn it? By the teacher who's so proficient and competent and capable? By the environment, will I hang out? Will I be able to bear through to the end of a course? And no matter what the learning event is, I expect those feelings are not unusual. The challenge of learning is a real challenge, whether you're a youngster heading into the first grade or someone starting graduate school or the School of Law at Harvard University. There's a certain sense of intimidation. So what we're saying is it's our job as designers and teachers to create enough safety that the learner will take the plunge. And that's what we mean. We mean just that. The challenge of learning is that the learners are able to face the challenge of learning because you have created the kind of safety they need.
What are some specific examples of safety issues that might come up for a learner?
Well, there are so many. And I think, again, of these principles as comprehensive. They're not only in terms of the materials are accessible. I know the program of the course beforehand. That's a safety issue. I have been in communication with the professor beforehand through the learning needs assessment. That's part of safety. The materials are well sequenced, and I see that I could probably manage the first parts, and when I look toward the end, I think, woof, wow, that's pretty complex. But they're well sequenced, so I know I'm going to do it step by step. That's part of safety. There's a certain element of safety, too, in what I would call graciousness. My mother used to say, always call someone by their name. Say please and thank you. Those good admonitions from Mrs. Vella still hold. Well, that is an element of safety. There are so many. As I say, I address this in great detail in the new book and also in all the other books. Safety has been a major issue in all the other books. But you see what I mean? It's not one thing that we do now. We've dealt with safety. It's an attitude. And I think safety probably is a profound way of showing respect for the learner.
So safety interconnected with respect for the learner. And then it sounds like it's addressing basic interactions between the facilitator, the instructor, and the learner.
Yes,
in that case.
Yes, and there's a certain element, I want to stress this, a certain element of courtesy, a certain element of professional respect. It's what you remember your best teachers did with you.
Now, Jane, you've taught a lot in cross-cultural contexts in your work in Africa and Asia and Latin America. What are some safety issues that have come up in a cross-cultural learning context for you?
These are immense, of course. And again, you mentioned that safety relates to respect. I would suggest safety relates to all of the other principles. And certainly it relates to that learning needs assessment, the fact that the dialogue in dialogue education begins long before the learning event. When you are working in a cross-cultural situation, and mind you, A cross-cultural situation doesn't mean you have to take your passport out. I go to the YMCA, and I swim with a group of, let me space it, elderly people. Believe me, it's cross-cultural. The things they talk about are not my themes. And I have to think, when I speak, how can I make sure that I'm able to communicate with these people so they feel safe? So safety helps me. And I will not talk about dialogue and education when I'm in the pool or the prospect of international peace. No, no. Do you see what I mean? That any kind of communication is affected when we think in terms of safety. So cross-culturally, we've got to do the homework, the preparation to know what the themes of the people and the cultural metaphors of the people we're working with are. That's a great way to show respect and to provide safety so the communication is equitable.
So the research on the safety needs to start in that learning needs and resources assessment that you keep referring
always,
to.
Always, dear. I mean, and again, it doesn't have to be formal, but for example, if I'm invited to a dinner party with these good people, I would really like to find out what they're reading, talk to them about, you know, talk to one of them anyway about what's going on in their life, where are their kids, where the kids are in school, or if their kids are already grandparents themselves. You know what I mean? To find out what's going on in the lives of people and what their images and metaphors are, if we want to communicate and not dominate, because that's what it's all about. We don't want to overwhelm people, and we want them to feel safe with us.
So it sounds like it connects to those principles of sound relationships or new roles for the facilitators and the learners as well.
Absolutely. These somehow or other, these are deeply interconnected. I think it's called quantum thinking.
I've heard people criticize this kind of approach because if emphasis on safety is seen as making things too easy. How do you make a learning event safe without making it not challenging?
Well, you don't. I mean, if it's not challenging, I want out. I don't want to either spend money or spend my time or invest in any way in a learning event that isn't pushing my boundaries. And I think, again, that's a feeling that most people share. Safe and easy are not the same at all. You can be safe jumping out of an airplane, and it sure is never easy, I'm sure. I haven't done it. Or you can be safe learning Arabic. And I know, can speak to that, it isn't easy. But you can be safe when your classes are well sequenced, the teacher is encouraging, has all those aspects of safety. No, safe and easy are not in any way synonymous.
Have you had an experience, Jane, where you've clearly blown the safety for a group of learners during a workshop or a training event that you've been involved in?
Oh, my goodness. All too many, Duane. Many of the stories in Learning to Listen, Learning to Teach indicate that. And very often that occurred when I, the teacher, as teacher, did not feel safe. When I was doing a course, for example, I'm thinking of the Ethiopia situation, I should not have been doing that course alone. I was teaching that course alone. And that was not a course, if you recall, preparing these young people to work in the clinics and working in the terrible drought in Ethiopia in 84 and 85. That was not a course that I should have accepted to do alone. Other times, I felt frightened because I didn't have a grasp of the content. And you know, it's very interesting. When I as teacher feel uncertain, when I feel unsafe, guess what? I don't create a safe place for the learners to learn. So the lack of safety is contagious. part of the way we can provide safety is by making sure that we feel well prepared, competent to do the job, and safe ourselves.
The next question stems from a personal example, Jane. I've had a situation where a safety issue has emerged during a workshop that I could never have anticipated during the Learn Needs and Resources assessment. In some cases, it had to do with the personal background of the person, the learning style. In other cases, it had to do with a conflict between two people that was pre-existing emerged during the course of the learning. How do you deal with something that comes up and that even can threaten to derail the whole learning event for everybody else?
That's a terribly important question, Duane, because it occurs. And let me say that in formal education, when the teacher is lecturing and there is no dialogue or very little dialogue in the learning process, those elements of antagonism or adversity or enmity or struggle are going on in the class, but because of the process, they don't emerge, and they superate, and they do hurt the learning. We just can't measure it because it's under the surface. However, when you use dialogue education, those elements come to the surface. And that's part of what we in Global Learning Partners have to teach people to anticipate and to welcome, to celebrate, and to deal with. Now, how we deal with them, I think, is, of course, determined by the context. There is no rule of thumb. I would suggest that, again, you pull in all the other principles, respect, time. I believe there's a story in one of the books about the Maldives where I said to people, excuse me, we're going to take a break. And they all looked at me a bit startled because it was 9:20 in the morning and we had started at 9 o'clock. I had to walk outside, get myself collected, and figure out what in the world I could do with some of the emotions that were boiling up in the room. Happily, I had some colleagues with me at the time, and we were able to talk about it. My point is that the context will provide a safe way for you to deal with this. You do have to deal with it as the teacher. You do. That leads to a question in terms of what is the role of the teacher. And the role of the teacher is to keep the environment as safe as possible for the whole group, not just for the individual who's having a problem. When you have two instructors, it's so helpful because sometimes, I mentioned this in the new book, the instructor can look over at his colleague and say, help, and you can take someone out of the room if it's necessary, invite them to talk outside. I mean, that's a moment of crisis, obviously, but these do come up, and it is our part to deal with them and not to push them back down in under the surface, because they will emerge and cause worse trouble, as we know, later on. I am addressing all of this, by the way, in the new Voices in Dialogue that's going to feature safety this spring.
Yes, that's right, Jane. That will be in the spring 2007 issue of the Voices in Dialogue e-newsletter, available on the website, of course. Good. A final question for you, Jane. I had a course I was doing on dialogue education, and I asked people to think about what made a learning event good for them. And the one guy said, my best learning experience was doing push-ups in the mud while my drill sergeant yelled at me the whole time.
That's wonderful.
So my question, I guess, also in the spirit of what you do in some of your books, are there situations where the principle of safety is not operative?
Well, you know, I bet it was deeply operative for this fellow in the sense that he knew deep down that the drill sergeant was not going to kill him, that he was really safe in that fellow's hands, as loud and as raucous and as obnoxious as the drill sergeant was acting. There must have been some connection there. And again, we can't perhaps measure that or find indicators of it. But I would suppose there was some connection. And by the way, this brings in another major issue. I have always wondered about military training. There certainly have to be issues of safety, basic safety, that people don't die in the midst of it. But when you're teaching people to kill other people, I wonder if you don't have to somehow abrogate and deny some of these principles, not only the principle of safety. I don't know. It's a good research agenda, Duane.
Yeah, and this context was interesting, too, because they were people going off to work in refugee camps.
Oh, my.
So I kind of paused when he said that. He said, well, that might have been the case for you, but I kind of doubt that's what you want to do with the people you'll be working with next year.
No, indeed. That's right. That's right. That's right. Or even if I may suggest, Duane, the question, if it's put as a question, that's a good example that you've given there. I might say in that situation, how can you, in a refugee camp, make that safety operative? Do you see what I mean? Always, always invite the person. You're always inviting the person to transfer what he's learning to the next, to the situation that he's looking forward to.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Jane, let's wrap up for the day. And let me just say to listeners, here's an invitation to send us some suggestions for future podcasts. And you can send it to welcome@globallearning.com. And you've been listening to Conversations on the Back Porch. Have a good day.
Bye now.